To, oh, sorry. Welcome everybody to the Community Engagement Subcommittee of the HIV Health San Francisco Planning Council. So let's go around and introduce ourselves. And I'll start with
Hey.
myself. I'm sorry. Oh, I thought someone said something.
No.
So my name is Derek Mapp. I'm the one of the co-chairs of this committee, and I'm a member of the Planning Council. And just name the I'll just do it. Erwin.
Present. I'm member, because member.
TJ.
TJ Limiaki, he can pronounce council member.
Richard.
Richard Sullivan, council member.
And Andre.
Andre Robertson, new member of the Planning Council.
Hey, welcome, Andre.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And welcome to the subcommittee. Beth.
Beth Neary, HIV Health Services with Department of Public Health.
And Kate.
Pat, council staff.
Excellent. Kira.
Kara, council staff.
Oi. It shifted around there a little bit. Stephen. Stefan.
That's Steve Hispano, the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Yes. And Lee. Welcome, Lee. Oh, you're on mute? You're still on mute, actually, Lee.
Oh, there we go. Sorry about
There you
that.
go.
Hi, here. Need you up, council member.
Yay. I think I got everyone there. Yes. So the next thing we'll be doing is, and this is a vote. Oh, it isn't a vote. It is a vote, right? We'll be looking at the May meeting minutes for review. Could you bring that up, please?
Today. So we have
Hopefully everyone got to review the last month's minutes and this month's agenda.
a couple of things to go over today. So we do have the carry forward allocation, which we will be voting on. Then we'll have Stephen talk about
Sorry.
her HCAP report, and hopefully Derek will give us some reunion project results details. We will also hear about a potential new COLA target. And
Ooh.
we'll be going over the needs assessment survey tool.
Very good. Thank you. I got that mixed up, didn't I? Sorry about that. So that's the draft agenda today. We'll accept them by, I forget what they call the term, but if no one has anything to change or addition, we'll just accept it. Anyone needs any changes or anything like that?
Yeah, approve it by consensus.
Approved by consensus. Thank you, Lee. And not seeing anyone looking at the for changes. It's approved. And so can you bring up the last month's minutes? Thank you. Okay. All right. Well, that was really quick. So again, approved by consensus. Did anyone need any changes in last month's minutes?
I'm just
Nice.
curious, why was Jesus's name in red?
He's on probation.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you for that. Good question. These minutes are approved. All right. So we're on to the next bit, which is, I'm sorry, I'm not seeing the minutes now. Sorry about that. We are, any announcements? I do have announcements. It's personal to myself, and it's to Kira and Kat directly. And I guess I should also alert Mark on this. I will be going to IAS this year, so I will be missing that full council meeting on that date. And I have a ACTG meeting in June, so I will be missing that full council date as well. So I just wanted to alert folks on that.
Thank
Any
you.
other announcements from anyone?
Maybe one announcement, just that it is budget season. And so the mayor announced the budget 2 days ago, the mayor's version of the budget. And so it's now going into the Board of Supervisors phase for the next month or two. So this is really the comment period on the budget. So I'm not saying there's anything we need to comment on, but just for awareness purposes, this is that time of year. I'm sure somebody will come from Happen to give a bigger update at the council.
That'll be really great. We will have a chance to review it before it's approved or any big movement on it.
For the citywide budget, not so we'll have some carry forward budget that you guys have full
Gotcha.
purview over shortly. But for the citywide budget for the HIV health services side, there's only one small change to reduce our training budget of $55,000, which is a little more than our training budget. We'll make it work. But the no cuts to services is the current phase. For the CHEP side, which I'm sure you guys are equally interested in, the health access points are getting, I forget what the final percentage is, but I think it's nothing this year, but in the year two of the budget, starting next year, I want to say it's about a 7% cut. It's whatever it is, it's between 5 and 10% and rather significant. There may be, of course, there's other agencies that help our clients in a variety of ways that are of interest to the wider set. So Happen has a larger advocacy list that I think they've circulated, although I'm not sure if I've seen it. Usually they come to talk to the council in the month this is going on, but they also usually start their advocacy by or before now. So there's probably some organizing going on somewhere. But as far as I know, for the two units you guys work most closely with, it's $55,000 cut to HHS, which we think we can manage in our opinion, but you guys can have your own opinions. And then I don't know what the dollar amount for the CHEP one is offhand. I don't recall. But it would be in the Health Commission meeting minutes of April 20th, what all the department cuts are. And it's a pretty extensive list. There's a lot of cuts to behavioral health and some other things too.
Great.
And some of the other departments we work with have things going on, the cuts that are
I know
significant.
that I do seem to be aware that when it comes to POC programming, PrEP, and transgender services, there's and some aging services from the Department of Aging, there are cuts that are quite deep, and they are program and programming and services that our community uses and will be using more of. And if I could put you on the spot, TJ, because I think you have better information about what Han is doing, could you do you have any of that information?
Sure, and I can send it out afterwards to Kara and Kat. Maybe they can send it out to. So we are planning an advocacy day next week, I believe, on the 16th. We have meetings set with 8 of the 9 supervisors. You can guess who may or may not be the person that doesn't want to meet with us around harm reduction and other issues. I also just want to say that we're having a candlelight vigil at Jane Warner Plaza on Friday night, starting at 7:30. It's slated to go 7:30 to 8, but there's several different groups performing in this, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence and a few other groups. So it may run a little bit longer, but if you want to stop by and participate, that's great. Let's see. Also, I will check in with, like Beth mentioned, I'll check in with Laura and Lance to see if they're going to meet up with the planning council again beforehand. Because I know they just did an update about 2 weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago at the full council meeting. So, but I know that they have ongoing meetings set up with Dan Tease and a few other people. And so they are shoring up some response in some places and still working on that. Also, I just want to point out that like one of the they're cutting workforce development programs deeply, deeply, including a small program at CCSF, which Richard was part of, Community Health Worker Program.
Oh yeah.
Oh, the child program.
Yeah, they've gutted the $286,000 for it. I can't believe they can't find that money somewhere. I mean, that's a pipeline for people that use harm reduction services and other services within our community who then use that program to get back into the workforce. The city get also like
Who's the name, please?
gives equivalent work experience for the time in the community health worker program. So it's really a sad thing to see that.
I think it's about four, about something like that. Yeah.
I think that I could live about less than 40 what I used to be.
I'm sorry, Richard. Could you mute, please? Sorry about that. Thanks, Ben. And thanks a lot,
Although I
TJ.
would like to say something on
Oh,
that,
go ahead.
if I may, thanks, TJ. That's horrible that they're doing that. A feeder organization like that. Like I said, I was part of it. I know a lot of people that have a lot of lived experience goes into that. It enables people to. It's just a shame. I let it be known right here and now. I'm not a big fan of Mayor Lori at all. This guy is dangerous, and we're going to see things like this happen more and more. He's doing on a local scale what we're seeing nationally. This guy's a drone. Sorry about that.
No, you're good to go, Richard. Thank you. I don't know if yes, and TJ, if you could send out that sort of timeline, that would be absolutely wonderful. I don't see any other announcements. So let's go. We don't have public. Does someone want to make a public comment? All right. So we're right on time with the carry forward allocation and talk, and we'll vote on it.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Give me 1 second. All right. Can folks see this?
Yes,
Yes.
ma'am.
So I'll go ahead and go through this. Bill did a really did us a great favor and put together this mini presentation. And so the Part A carryover dollar amount is $395,895. And that is going over to carry over into these four service categories. That's mental health, food slash delivered meals, emergency financial assistance, and other professional services, specifically legal. All right, so beginning with emergency financial assistance. This is a recommendation to have 120,000 go towards emergency financial assistance. And I'll go ahead and read that little paragraph. Many Ryan White Part A eligible clients are requesting emergency financial assistance in meeting the most basic of living expenses, which has been increased this year and last due to the impact of the COVID pandemic on the economy. These funds are also utilized as eviction prevention funds to assist clients from losing housing and potentially becoming homeless. Clients are capped at $500 annually for emergency financial assistance grants. The addition of carry forward dollars to this program represents no additional administrative, programmatic expenses and directly expands the number of financial assistance grants available for clients. In terms of unit of services or units of service, $120,000 would be provided in $700 increments to 154 clients. Moving on to that second one, food bank slash home delivered meals. It is recommended that it would get $207,593. And this is the provision of services, and this provision of services includes prepared meals, groceries, and nutrition education under the supervision of a registered dietitian. It also is a food solicitation and a food bank for agencies that feed their HIV clients. Services can include congregate meals and nutritional counseling. These services include food pantry slash groceries, home delivered meals, and the units of service here are 120 clients would receive 20 meals for 5 months, 20 meals a month for 5 months, and then 167 clients would receive 4 bags a month for 5 months. All right, moving on to mental health, specifically trainings, that is recommended to receive 49,302. And this is trauma-informed care training that is especially focused on long-term survivors and aging. So it would be 5 trainings that are all recorded and available both in person and remote. There's also Train the Trainers curriculum for mutual aid, which is clients helping clients, living healthfully groups. So these are peer-led groups such as Positive Force, Living Now, and Plus. And there are, this does include pilot training 1 to 2 times. In terms of that last one, which is other professional legal stipends, this is recommended to receive $20,000. And this is to support for additional legal services interns to support client case research and client interviews to better address emerging legal needs. This is proposed in part due to the ongoing housing crisis in San Francisco and potential complications as we emerge from eviction moratoriums. All right, and Bill put together a nice little summary. So HHS prepared this recommendation based on the following criterion. All are allowable HRSA service categories. Services go directly to benefit the clients. HCPC has approved these service categories in similar amounts in past years. The identified agencies have ensured that they could expend all funds allocated in this recommendation in the allowable time period and have a history of doing so. So in conclusion, HHS is recommending to the HCPC that it draft a motion to approve the 396,895 SFEMA Ryan White Part A and Ryan White Part A slash MAI carry forward on the following service categories, which are emergency financial assistance, food bank slash home delivered meals, mental health, and legal services. All right, and let me switch over really quick.
Do you mind if I, Beth, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, I want to do just a little bit of framing. So HIV Health Services prepares a proposal. I think that's historically at the request of the council. It is fully the council's decision on what to fund, which categories. Like from scratch, you can pick any of the categories that we already do. And you, of course, can't pick agencies. Like we have to do the procurement. So we partly make these suggestions based on things that are like doable in the timeframe available. Because essentially this is unspent money from last year. So we just found out how much was unspent from last year. And we turned that in a week or so ago to HRSA, and we have 60 days to make a proposal. So this month or next month, you guys need to vote on something for us to put in. And then HRSA takes a month to 3 months to say yes. And then we have to spend it before February 28th, with which GPH contracting, that essentially means we're probably gonna have to add it to existing contracts because you can't start an RFP in that amount of time. So these are not, by any stretch of the imagination, the only things that you guys can select to do, nor are they the final amounts you guys need to select. These are just sort of an amalgamation of things that you funded in the past with some attention to the most recent needs assessment things that are raised, like from the council's other work and other presentations that have happened. But so HHS is not, like, we recommend these amounts, but we know it is not at all our choice. So edit as you will. And just there were one or two little typos on there. The emergency financial The emergency financial assistance used to be capped at $500. Now it's trending towards $700. So we corrected that in one place in the slides and not somewhere else. So on average, those grants are usually about $700. They can be higher in some extreme eviction prevention situations. And they can be lower. Like somebody just needs to cover like something less expensive than that.
And again, just for clarification, Beth, these are not only time limited, but it's essentially one time carryover dollars.
Yes. These are not ongoing projects, and HRSA will has to, after you guys make your recommendation and we submit it, HRSA has to approve each one line by line, and they won't approve anything that they think isn't like a pilot or one-time thing. If they think it's really you're doing mental health services ongoing, they're gonna say, no, that's not, that's like you can't start that with carry forward. That's not, you know, or you'll just have a cliff at the end. So it has to be things that we can at least explain as a pilot or a one-time thing that like we don't have to sustain.
Thank you. TJ?
I mean, unless anybody has any more questions, I think we should make a motion.
I'm not seeing any other. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay, let's see. I'm just gonna, sorry. Let's see. I'd like to make a motion to approve the $396,850 San Francisco EMA Ryan White Planning. I don't know what the A stands for, but and then the RWPA slash MAI carry forward on the following service categories: emergency financial assistance, $120,000; food bank and home delivery meals, $207,592; and mental health for $49,302; and legal service for $20,000.
This is.
So did you say the emergency for 700?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you say did you update with what Beth was saying in regards to the emergency financial?
I did not. I just read. Yeah, no, I didn't. So.
So it's the 700 for the emergency financial.
Oh, and I think that doesn't necessarily have to be in
No.
the motion, but we should update that on the slides before you guys present that in the next subcommittee. So it's sort of the how, the more detailed how it will be spent.
Got you. So with that correction, would someone like to second that motion?
Lee, I second it.
Thank you, Lee. And now we vote. And I think this is a line vote, so just yay or nay when I call your name. TJ?
Oh, yes. Yay.
Erwin? You have to say it.
Oh, you're muted, Erwin.
Oh, you're muted. Sorry.
Okay, yes.
Thank you. Richard, unmute.
Yes.
Thank you. Lee?
Yes.
Andre?
I guess I'm non-voting until I get appointed, but I would say yes.
Okay, thank you. You're right. Sorry about that. I say yes. It passes, at least from this committee. Thank you. So the next bit here is we are, where am I at? We are at the HIPCAT report with Stephen Spano.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I hope you're all well. As per usual, what I'll do is I'll go over a couple of the cases in this report that I think should be highlighted. I'm obviously able to talk about any others or elaborate, and I'll make myself available to do that afterward. So the first one I wanted to talk about was the very first case, which is 2026-27. This is not the first time that we've seen this, but it is a different client than the last time we saw it. This is a client who struggles against a very like complex mental health history, including PTSD. They made some requests of the dental service provider, one that they be sedated, which was declined. They declined to do that. Another was that some of the work that they needed to do involved the deep cleaning, and he did not want a needle in his mouth. And I guess there is some way, I don't know, I'm not a dentist, but there is some way to provide this service without a needle. And he was able to get that done at a different provider. So that's what he shared with me. This provider wouldn't do that. And it kind of provoked a response from him, and it led to a termination of services. The client's case manager made efforts to try and get the client back in. That was unsuccessful. The client, the service provider declined. The client did at some point go and obtain a prosthetic or dentures from a private provider. And but it was poorly done, or not to, not to the satisfaction of the client. It was causing a lot of pain, and so the client came to me wanting support in getting back into services with the Ryan White provider. Kind of after discussion and kind of, hearing the history of the case, understanding a little bit more about when the last efforts were mounted, I didn't have a good outlook on getting the client back into care. But we were able to support by referring to an alternative service provider that I believe is going to be a far better fit, and I'm informed that they're now well connected. It's always hard for me to do these because on the one hand it feels like a success. On the other hand, it's upsetting that the other the initial provider wouldn't overturn their termination. There's really not a lot of dental services options for folks, and so fortunately this time worked out. But it's not always going to be like that. And at least the last time that this happened, if you all remember, and this is a previous contract year, so kind of irrelevant, but just wanted to contrast it. I was able to negotiate a solution where the client, along with their primary care provider and with some additional supports, was able to get back into services despite their kind of involuntary physical reactions. It's understandable that that's dangerous when you're sitting in a dental chair, but there are methods to mitigate those dangers and to provide the services. It was just unfortunate that it wasn't done in this case. I am happy the other provider stepped up though. So half a success, half an, a little upset. The next case I'll talk about is 2026-31. I raise this because this is a case that I think illustrates the kind of level of support needed in instances when a client has a complex legal issue. I won't go into too much depth about the legal issue, but suffice it to say, the client was in a position where their even their meager SSI income was being garnished to the tune of about 15%, 50%. So the client was living on very, very little income, and unable to support himself, had fallen behind on rent, could not find support for dealing with the legal issue because it's out of San Francisco County, and also has some other disabilities, making it very difficult for them to even get out of the county to go to the courthouse that they needed to go to. So on, this it presents, as you can see, like kind of multiple issues, which is why I think it's helpful to have an attorney in this position because it required a lot of parsing apart, right? There's a now a housing issue, the client was behind in rent, there was an issue with regard to access to services, access to justice, as well as the underlying legal issue that needs to be addressed. Otherwise, there will be no relief. And so, just a lot to parse apart. And it looks like we're kind of on a path towards some support for the client. I believe we linked them. I've been working kind of in tandem with, my legal service colleagues here. I believe we linked them to an attorney who's going to re represent them in Contra Costa. I've begun linking them to case management services, although it looks like the client is very well may become houseless. I think we caught it early enough to at least effectuate a referral to either an RCFCI or a TRCF level of care. So the first step is I got to link them to case management so that I can work with their care provider to get that referral in, and then I will support with the referrals to those providers of those facilities. So kind of a multi-layered approach here that's a little bit of a slow burn, and this client is really facing a lot of instabilities, but I'm grateful that we have, of course, the amazing network of services that we have here to support. The last one I wanted to do was just kind of lift up a success here. This is a case that's been on, it's 20-2605 on page two. I just closed it out because it, this is actually yet another one that has come back. This is a client that struggles a lot with cluttering, cluttering disorder. Like a lot of folks that struggle against cluttering disorder, very thoughtful, but they have a, a habit of collecting books. That poses a particular danger because when you find books, especially when they're not like in a, store or, even a used bookstore, but like sometimes on the street or things like that, bed bugs can live there. Other, pests can live in them. It does pose a real danger. And so, the last time this happened, we, kind of worked through it. And what part of the resolution was to get the client connected to one of our kind of out of network providers, the Mental Health Association, which is a peer support group for people who have hoarding behaviors or cluttering disorder. And that was working very well for this client until there were staffing changes. And apparently, the client was disconnected from those services and those support groups, unbeknownst to me. So the issue kind of resurfaced more recently, and it was actually at the very beginning of this year. So it's been going on for quite a while. We came up again with a, a response. We were able to support the client with, getting them back into Mental Health Associate, back into the MHA groups because he talked about it being very helpful for him. But then, even as we made those efforts, they continued to not be taking the meetings. So when I found this out, I was trying to sort out exactly what was going on, and it turns out there was no tablet or device the client could use. So steps in, HCAP steps in with a reasonable accommodation request, made that request earlier last week, and found out yesterday that that request was granted. The provider is going to purchase an iPad, not specifically for that client, but for one that other folks can use as well on at the facility. So a viable option. The client only needs it a couple of hours a week, so that's great that it can be a shared device. But a small success by virtue of legal mechanism. And with that, I will make myself available to answer any questions, go dive deeper.
Any questions? All right, not seeing any. Great work as always, Stefan. Thanks a whole lot for your great work that you continue to do in supporting not just the clients, but also providers
Of
as
course, yeah,
well.
thank you.
The next piece is my report back from the Union Project Bay Area Summit that we had in February. We a couple of months ago, I finally got the report summary back. And sorry, it's taking me so long to get back with to the council with this report. But so the summit was called "We Are Here, Honoring Every Voice, Every Journey," and it occurred over the Valentine holiday, February 13th and 14th, which is Thursday and Friday, over at the AIDS Foundation on Howard. We have between 80 to 120 or so folks over the 2 days. While there was, as always in these sort of planning of things, there were some bumps and scrapes along the way. We were able to get pre and post information. We only got about 25 person response we were able to get to. 16 of those were community members, two of them were service providers, three people were both, and one was an ally. So everyone was invited to fill out the survey that was developed. So the overall impact from the report is, and one of the things they were tasked with the evaluators was to identify objectives. No big surprise here at all. Folks, the feedback essentially was identifying services available to support the health and well-being of the long-term survivor community was big on people's minds, and strengthening the connection between the community and services that supports their health and well-being was also a big thing. Respondents reported a 19% increase in their ability to identify services that support their health and well-being. 88 of them reported being very confident in identifying the resources in their community. And that was the after result. The before result was only 50% were confident in identifying services. So there's been an increase in people's awareness around the services that was happening in their community. And it was very similar to in objective two as well. So overall, so one of the things, we had a large group, and then we had breakout groups, and we had tables, tabling. And so the large groups, the breakout sessions, were essentially resources in the Bay Area. That makes a lot of sense, therefore, that while 50%, 56% weren't as aware, that there was a higher percentage afterwards because there was tabling of resources there that people found really helpful. Considering on the first day, this was considering work and meaningful activity. There was one around advocacy and activism, taking what's personal and bringing it into a political sphere, and working while receiving public benefits. Interesting enough, the highest rate is one was considering work and meaningful activity. This was a panel of folks that were talking about not just return to work, but also what sort of activities other than paid work or full-time paid work, what would that look like in your life? How to use your lived experience in your experience and bring it into a space where essentially you're doing storytelling, and that you're engaged in your social in society. I'll just put it that way. So that was a high-rated one. As well as the activism and advocacy for very similar reasons. On day two, the highest rated one, so there was a couple of sessions there, the people's panel, there was a listening session where people was giving feedback, and there was a panel on supporting quality of life, well-being, and mental health in regards to social connection and healthcare. The highest rating one there was the, not surprisingly, the listening session. Folks really wanted to be, of course, heard and engaged, which again, like, it really isn't that surprising. What I would also say, I'm reading from the report itself, so I'm sorry if I'm all over the place here. The morning session on the second day included a sister circle. So this was a circle for women. It was women's wellness session, so it was just women. There was a session around staying housed as we age. And there was a session with the Department of Aging, understanding aging services and how they can help. Interesting enough, the women's circle was very well attended, highly rated, as well as staying housed as we age. And that was around housing supports and resources. And all three of them were fairly highly rated, but those were the two main ones from the morning session. The afternoon session, care without judgment, substance use and harm reduction and recovery for older adults. There was a session on from paperwork to peace of mind, understanding your benefits. I really like that title actually. And desire don't expire. So relationships, dating, and living fully. And the two highest rating ones, of course, was the substance use harm reduction and recovery for older adults, care without judgment, and paperwork to peace of mind, understanding your benefits. Both of those got 100% as being informative and useful. And so what I would say is a lot of folks really use this opportunity not only to engage with each other, like community talking to community, and that they really was hungry for that, but also hearing about the variety of experiences that the panelists had, as well as the resources that were still available throughout the city, particularly when it comes to HIV and aging. There, anecdotally, from my experience, like one of the things that I kept on seeing were people literally saying to each other, "I haven't seen you in years. What have you been doing?" Like everyone, just about everyone kept on saying that to other people, as well as to myself. So it was a wonderful opportunity for folks to spend and catch up with each other, as it were, and actually talk about the changing environment of services. And so, and in fact, like one of the things I kept on thinking was, you know, we could really use more of these sort of big sessions where the community can come together and do this sort of things. Some of the feedback that the evaluators picked out as significant moments, some of the statements that people made were when did they get a sense of connection with their community? Somebody wrote, "Meeting a shy, introverted trans woman who was recently diagnosed," was someone's statement. One of the statements was that Ms. Shabazz L's presentation had the most impact on me, and this was during the activism and advocacy session. She presented in a very organized way a lot of the work that Han does, actually. And the organization was of how you take your personal story and channel it into activism, the way that Han does, was created by a group out in, I think, Minnesota, somewhere in the Midwest. And it was just very well organized. But it had a strong impact on some people here. One of the statements was meeting different people with AIDS. Some folks, this is one of the rare moments that they got to see so many different types of folks living with HIV and AIDS. Someone wrote, "I enjoyed hearing stories from other community members. It made me feel like I might be gaining more acceptance in this community that I had not been given or able to find," which I really, that still really surprises me. So some of the things that folks still felt left out of the discussion. Let me check that out. Sorry about that. Heterosexual HIV and HIV and AIDS programming, more activism activities, which still was kind of surprising. Social events and excursions and outing. There were some folks that were Really looking for much more of a connection with East Bay programming, particularly around benefit counseling work, and gathering spots. And folks were asking about what about us as peers giving support, like peer volunteerism. Someone was asking about greater support around, particularly around aging, health maintenance through physical activity, physical exercise. There were a request for more retreats to empower. And interesting enough, two of the big pieces were around housing and financial services. So that was the outcome of those 2 days. I know that some of the guys here also attended. You were there, TJ, I think, or am I wrong? You weren't there. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know if anybody else happened to be there, but maybe you could say something about it if you were there. How did you guys feel about that report back? Did it sound confusing? Is there something that you would want to, any feedback about the report at all? Are you saying something there, Beth?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. It was just very helpful. It was more detailed than I'd heard before, so I was grateful for it. Thank you for sharing. And that was something that was done with the carry forward funds last year, including
Yes.
connect the two topics. So co nice coincidence that you're presenting it today.
Right. I am hoping that at some point I can do a better job putting this together and presenting the data to council. The evaluation team felt that it would come better from me since they weren't there directly. They were just there receiving the results or the raw data to create the results. All right. And that's it from me. The next piece is about the COLA vote.
Yeah.
The COLA targets, rather, which is a vote.
Yeah. So we do have a, I believe this proposed COLA target came from Bill. And he actually proposed that this new COLA target focus on people living with HIV 45 years and younger. So I wanted to see how folks felt about that.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah, people living with HIV 45 years and younger. So any discussion
Will
about it?
this be inclusive of folks who aged out of, like, is it going to be a range like, oh, this is folks that are 20 to 40 or 45 years old? So people that essentially aged out of adolescent services, or are we going like 45 and anyone under 20, 45?
Bill unfortunately isn't here to talk about it, so all I have is just 45 years and younger.
In lots of ways, that makes sense to me. Any feedback from anyone else about the potential quota?
Did you
TJ?
want to add anything, Beth? I don't know if Bill maybe mentioned it to you.
I've only heard a tiny bit. I was thinking more about Derek's comment about the age range. So age ranges that we sometimes think about is transitional age youth, which is usually like 18 to 26. There are not a ton of people with HIV in the city in that age range. And they might have different needs between 26 and 45 in that age group. Just because that is often by a lot of systems separated out as like a set of people who want sort of different like service environments sometimes. So just a possibility is you could make it more specific and say like 26 to 45 or whatever age range you guys want information on. Or not, whichever.
Yeah, I was going to say, unless Bill wants it under 18, maybe do it 18 to whatever the original age, 40, 45, they gave. And we haven't really done anything that I can think of in the last few years around this, so it might be a good idea to do that.
Were you going to say something there, Lee? Or
Not really. I'm just wondering, what was the last time if we've done a COLA for this demographic, and I really would like more information about why Bill thinks this is an important demographic to address this time.
TJ.
Could I just ask going forward if the staff, when they come with an idea for a COLA, if we can get a list of, say, the last 5 years of COLAs that we've done, just so that we don't have to ask you guys and wait. No.
Yeah, so starting
Okay.
in 2020, we actually had people who speak Portuguese. Then 2022, we had long-term survivors. And then in 2023, we had people affected by eviction. And just last year, we had cisgendered women living with or at risk for HIV. So I think the last time we had anything age-related for a COLA was in 2016 to 2017. In terms of needs assessment, though, we have had some age-related ones. And so just last year, we had people living with HIV over 65. And then we had in 2019, 50 plus, and then long-term survivors. So we really haven't had an age, a specific, this specific age range, in quite some time.
That makes a lot of sense. I think I would just to follow up on something that TJ mentioned. I think you were saying like from 18 and to 40, 45, and that might be too wide of an age range. Like I think there might be the level of or the type of needs between 30 and 40 might be different than somebody 18 to 20 or even 20 to 26 for that matter. But it would be in my head really important to establish a thought on an age range. Yeah. So, would people be open to forwarding this item as a color agenda because we haven't had one yet, but have a consideration for an established age range? Would people be open to agreeing? Moving forward, would somebody like to make that motion?
Is this, sorry, Derek, just to clarify, is this a motion to accept this COLA target, or is this to keep it on the agenda?
Good question.
I'd like to keep it on the agenda and discuss it a little bit further.
Yeah,
Thank you.
yes.
All right.
We can continue keeping this on the agenda. Hopefully, Bill will be able to join us at next month's meeting. I'll go
And
ahead and reach
explain a
out
little
to
bit
him.
more his idea.
Yeah. All right.
Great. And that's not something we need to vote on, correct?
If we eventually decide that this is a potential COLA target that we would like to take on, then it would be something we would need to vote on. But right at this moment, no, we don't need to vote on it.
All right, guys. So we will continue this item on the agenda and pick it up at next meeting. Thank you, Lee, for that clarification. I didn't need that. So the next piece actually is the needs assessment update.
Yes. So let me go ahead and share my screen again.
I'm wearing glasses and still need to
Can
figure out how to see.
folks see my screen? I'm not sure if it's sharing.
Oh, yes, we can see it. Thank
Okay.
you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. see. Right, let me log in really quickly. All right, and this is going to be our survey tool that we use during our needs assessment. This is what we have participants fill out. So typically for a needs assessment, we will have around 30 questions or less, and I believe this one has 26 currently. So there's room to add questions. This is for the specific target population, which is people living with HIV who have immigrant experience. So I'll go ahead and go through this, and if folks want have any idea of what they would like to add, or if they're looking to add a specific question, please feel free to voice that. So we have age, gender identity, sexual orientation, race, how long they've been living with HIV, whether they're engaged in medical care, where they currently receive primary medical care, if they've missed any doses of their medication in the last year, if they're virally undetectable, any other diagnoses or chronic conditions, their current insurance status, if they're working a part-time or a full-time job currently, as well as their primary source of income and what that monthly income looks like. Their living situation. If they're experiencing food insecurity and how they typically purchase their groceries. If they've ever been incarcerated and when the last time they were. If they're currently engaged in any social or support groups, and if they've ever accessed mental health services, and then below that, if they've ever struggled with substance use or felt that it impacted their life, or if they ever sought or received treatment for substance use. So this is a demographic survey. This is just one portion of, during our focus group, this is just one portion that they need to do. Typically, then we have a longer, more in-depth discussion. So this is more demographic questions. So any ideas as to questions that folks would like to add in here, or anything that they saw that they'd like to change?
TJ?
Thanks, Derek. Hey, Jared, thank you for all that. I'm just curious if we might want to ask a question about whether they were diagnosed in San Francisco or where they were originally diagnosed.
Oh, I think that's an excellent question.
Beth?
Just wondering if the references to 65 are a holdover from the last one or if that is going to
Oh,
stay in there.
yes.
Okay. And also for the income, the maximum income threshold is 24,000, which is okay, but it's far under the Ryan White cap. So I wonder if we might want to keep a cut point there. I don't think anybody not getting Ryan White would sneak into this. But you could do the 600% FPL as a cut point, possibly too.
Fix this later.
For a household of one, I would think is the place to start with that.
Sorry, you're talking about. Oh, monthly income.
Yes. Yeah, because I just feel like some people who answer the survey are going to have more than that. Do you need to know if anybody's ineligible for Ryan White at the end of this? Or is it just everybody over $2,000 is okay to be in one group?
This is mostly just a typical question we've asked time and time again. You'd actually be
Okay. Well,
surprised.
if it aligns with
Yeah.
your prior data, maybe no changes then. Yeah.
Okay.
Could you go further up, please?
Did you want to see a specific question, Derek?
There was something about this the missing dose just below. Between those two and the virally undetectable, I keep on thinking in terms of whether that's a rather outmoded question. I keep on thinking in terms of the global goals and that each country takes up, and so they look at who's out of care, who's in care, and if they're virally suppressed. So I'm wondering if that question could be changed. Are you stably, or are you regularly or stable in care? If that makes any sense.
But Derek, my only thing about that is somebody might be stable in care and not associate taking their meds every day. That's the same thing.
This is true.
We
This
do
is
ask
true.
a separate question here. It's if they are engaged in medical care.
Gotcha. Okay.
And
Yeah.
maybe with the, are you engaged in medical care? Put a range on it. Like, have you seen a doctor within the last 6 months?
That's number, so number six is are you engaged in
Oh, okay.
medical care? And then number seven is if yes, when was the last time you saw your PCP?
Right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Sorry for that. Beth?
Two possible question ideas. One around where do you get the majority of your information on where to access health services? Like is it more word of mouth or case manager or primary care provider? As possible options. And then the other idea is, and I don't know if this is a good idea to include in the survey or not, but I think we're generally worried about whether people are staying home more in this population, in key moments of possible immigration crackdowns. So something either around have you actually avoided care in this past year or two,
Right.
in favor of staying home, or something about like have you opted for telehealth over in-person care? Might be a nicer way to put that.
Okay. So the first one, where do you receive information regarding HIV?
HIV services and agencies. I mean, it's not optimal wording, but something like
You can
that.
work on it. Don't worry, I'll work on
Yeah.
it. I just want
Yeah.
to
And then
make
the
sure I
answer
get
is,
it down.
yeah, ideally would include things like case management or primary care or friends and family. I'm sure there's others, but those are the ones, main ones I hear about. Or online. Could just be online, general searching.
And the second one, you said, have you opted for telehealth over in-person care?
Yeah, out of a preference to not be out in public. I don't know if there's a good way to say that. Maybe others have ideas whether there's a good idea way to say that or whether we shouldn't delve in.
So maybe make it two questions, one about not going in person, and then two, have you participated or do you know of telehealth options?
I wonder if, I don't think we have that question. That was a two-parter. So first is whether they, what are the second part?
Have opted to stay home rather than attend medical appointments. In the last year or two?
In-person medical appointments.
Yes, definitely in person.
I have a question. Can you get specific? Are you a question about are you concerned for your safety when seeking care?
Oh.
If so, what are those concerns?
Yes.
Because that'll get, I guess it'll give you something a little more specific.
Kira, I love your O's.
My what?
Your O's. Oh.
I just it's it well, here's the thing. Because we only are limited, we're not really we don't have to necessarily stick to just 30 questions, but ideally we don't want folks participants when they're coming in for a focus group to have to fill out a huge packet, right? So
Right.
some of these questions I can definitely incorporate into the discussion portion. Whether that's opening with that question or somehow incorporating it in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's very interesting because I'm like, whoa, I haven't really thought about
Well,
some of
I'm
these.
really appreciating Beth's additions because this is we're in a changing political environment, and I think being sensitive to how those changes are affecting our the population that we're inquiring about is important, both to protect them and to get information that we need.
Well, and the changing political environment, like this group, some portion of this group, is the most impacted by the Medi-Cal changes too, which is more in the future. So I don't know if it's probably too soon to survey about that, but
Now start it.
yeah. So I mean, so we could say something like, do you anticipate losing access to Medi-Cal in the
Yes.
next 12 months
Yes.
or having
Yes.
trouble maintaining it?
That would be awesome.
Yeah, although we want them to know they can still come, like whether or not they have medical, they should still come to the health centers.
Yeah, and that can be reiterated just by, Kira stating that during the event.
I have something. I have a question.
Yeah,
Yes.
give me one second, Erwin,
Okay.
because I want to go back to TJ. You had a second portion to this question, correct? To number
Yes.
20.
Yeah, it would be something like, have you utilized e-health services, or do you know of e-health services? Something like you can word it whatever way you want.
Telehealth?
Telehealth. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, thinking in public school terms, public health terms. Sorry.
Telehealth services
Or know of them.
or right, we'll leave that as a comment box for now.
It is
And
not very similar to the one that Beth had offered around essentially being more at home rather than being out and about.
I guess, yeah, you're right. Have you have to stay home rather than attend in personal?
So maybe there's either a way to integrate them or choose which one would be the better question.
Maybe we could like put it back into aggregate and say something like, have you made any changes in how you access care in the last 12 months? And then say, I access telehealth more.
Or
And then
actually, that could
I
be one
choose
of
to
the
stay home
outside
more, you know,
questions.
or I skip
Yeah.
appointments to avoid being out in public.
Yeah.
Have you made any changes
to how you access healthcare in the past year?
That could be one of the nuanced questions.
So let me this one. We may change tax healthcare. Then Andre, you mentioned
Yeah, are you concerned for
with
your
your
safety when
safety.
accessing care?
I guess just care in general.
And then, if so, What are those concerns? We have our own assumptions. They could say, I got warrants, so I don't want to be out.
All right. All right. And then Erwin, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if for statistical purposes will be important to make a distinction in gender identified and gender at birth.
Repeat that one more time.
Do you have their current gender identified, right? I
Yes.
don't know if adding the gender at birth will be for statistical purposes important. I don't know,
It's not important here in that context.
All right.
Yeah. And we actually do get a lot of pushback. We have in the past, even within this question. So I
All
want
right.
to leave this one just as is.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you, though.
Okay.
I can say though that that's how we report up for Ryan White grants now. Federally, they
Oh,
only want
gender
to
at
know sex
birth.
at birth. You don't need to change the survey engaging with the clients, but like they only accept sex at birth now information for the moment.
I wonder what they do with intersex folks.
They have a box for that now in Ryan White, at least. When they made this change, they made that possible. For Healthcare for the Homeless, another grant I work with, they don't. So we just are missing people in our sex at birth tables because it's a big enough population that there are 5 to 10 people each year who fall into that. But for Ryan White, they handle that better. Not a lot better. It's still limiting, but not a worst case. In close, but not a
All right. Well, we've reached 30, which is ideally where I wanted to get to. And I actually have even follow-up questions that I think would be good to ask during the discussion. So unless somebody has a pressing question that they'd like on here, I'll go ahead and stop sharing.
Thank you.
Right.
All right.
Any other comments that anyone had before we move towards the end? I think we're a little bit early here. In fact, I know that we're a little bit early here, but we're now at the next meeting date and agenda items. So the next meeting date is July 1st, same time, same bat channel. And we are now at adjournment.
All right.
Thank you, everyone.
Right. I'm impressed, Derek. You did all right.
All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot, Andre. That means a lot, actually. Thank you. You guys have a good one.
Thanks,
Thank
everyone.
you.
Welcome aboard, Andre.
Thank
Welcome
you
aboard.
so much.